You're listening to Mind Your Own Business. Hi, I'm Scott Sullivan, your host. Mind Your Own Business is a weekly show that we do talking to some of the greatest CEOs and entrepreneurs, helping you to be better at being a business professional by learning from all of the experience that these entrepreneurs and CEOs bring from all around the world. Exclusively here on Inspired News Radio. And now it's time for Mind Your Own Business.
Well, it's a great day right here in Inspired News Radio. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Mind Your Own Business, the show that every week we bring you some of the coolest, most fantastic people that are either in the entrepreneur space, they're successful in their own right, and they have nuggets of information to share with us. Each and every week, I try and bring you some fascinating people that can give us information that makes us better at what we do every single day. And as you know, the world that we're living in right now is, well, let's just say it's in a little bit of upheaval. And I have got a guest with me today that I'm super excited to be talking to. And I am so glad that she took the time out of her busy schedule to spend an hour with us because she has so much information to share with us. So, Jenna Spinelli, welcome to Mind Your Own Business. And how the heck are you today?
Hey, Scott. It's great to be here. I am doing well. It is a beautiful summer day here in State College, Pennsylvania, which some people may know as Happy Valley.
That is fantastic. And we're so glad that you're here on Mind Your Own Business. So today we're going to talk a little bit to Jenna Spinelli about a variety of different topics. First and foremost is Jenna. I'm going to just brag on her just a little bit. She's a fellow broadcaster. She is works in the podcasting industry, but most importantly, she has married two things together, the McCourtney Institute for Democracy at Penn State University there in State College, and working with a local NPR station, WPSU, she is hosting and producing a podcast every week called Democracy Works. And we could not be in a better place in the world to be talking about the democracy that we live in than right now. So Jenna, thank you so much for being here. Why don't you tell us, just give us about 5 minutes and tell us a little bit about Democracy Works, what you do and what you talk about each week, and some of the information that our listeners can find by tuning into Democracy Works.
Sure. So at its most basic level, the show examines what it means to live in a democracy. Democracy is intentionally broad and kind of complicated, which is great for podcasters. There's no shortage of things to talk about. We've been producing a weekly show for over 2 years, and I feel like we've just barely scratched the surface of all the potential topics out there to talk about. It's ever changing, as you mentioned, based on what's happening in politics, in the news. You know, sometimes we look at big topics. As you mentioned, the show is produced by the McCourtney Institute for Democracy at Penn State, which is an academic research center. So we are very much grounded in research that covers social sciences, communication, arts and sciences, all of these sorts of things. Sometimes we're looking at big, heady concepts like neoliberalism or demagoguery. Sometimes it's much more tangible things like voting by mail, for example, which is something that folks are thinking about, or protest movements. There's certainly lots of protests happening throughout the country right now. Protest and free expression and dissent are hallmarks of democracies, what separates them from authoritarian countries. So, you know, we try to be nimble based on what's happening in the news, but also, you know, understanding that sometimes you have to take that step back. You know, we're not giving people hot takes or partisan punditry, the red versus blue. Rather, we're looking to help people, you know, understand some of these concepts that they might have forgotten from their high school or college civics classes, or maybe never learned at all. I mean, I have learned so much over the past 2+ years of doing this show. My background is in journalism, so I don't have a PhD, though it certainly feels like I've earned one over the course of doing the show. I've read lots and lots of books on democracy, more than I ever thought that I would. But it's been great. I feel like I am more civically engaged. I've heard from our listeners that the show gives them hope for how they can make an impact in our democracy, you know, outside of that tribalism that I was mentioning earlier, that, you know, there are lots of things that unite us all as humans. And in order for democracy to function, we all have to work together. We have to find ways to overcome those differences. And, you know, I've heard from our listeners, like I said, that our show is one source of that hope and that knowledge that they need to be more active in our democracy and more civically engaged.
I love it. And I love the fact is that you mentioned that it's not, you know, us versus them or red versus blue, or, you know, there's not all the pundits that we're actually just, you know, this giant umbrella that's covering over the entire, you know, this experiment that we call, you know, democracy here in this little colony across the pond, you know. So I think that's really, really cool. I think it's fantastic that you are actually out there, you know, putting out this information. And we are going to dig into that just a little bit, but you also touched on, I want to unpack the fact is that you're also a journalist. So the other thing that we're going to talk about today, and one of the things I definitely want to cover, is this new, you know, gig economy and the way we're migrating, you know, from the, you know, get a job, stay there for 35 years, retire, get a gold watch, go home and go gardening, to now I'm working in a gig economy. I want to talk a little bit about that, because you, not only are you working as a day job and you're, you know, with the McCourtney Institute for Democracy at Penn State, but you're also, you know, you're a freelance journalist. So what does that mean to you? And we'll talk a little bit about that as the gig economy. What does freelance mean? And then how does the gig economy, and how do you fit into that? And then lastly, I also understand that you've now taken that passion and everything that you've done in your journalistic education and career, and now you're actually teaching the next generation or the next up and coming group of people that are going to be our future journalists. And I think these all kind of intertwine together. And the reason why I want to kind of bring all three of these into this cord that we're weaving here is because, you know, the future of our democracy, I know this is going to sound really corny to come all the way back around, but the future of our democracy as we know it is going to be based on that freedom of expression and that First Amendment right that we have. And journalism is going to be a part of that. And it doesn't just mean, you know, putting the pen to paper. It means, you know, podcasting. It means having a video on a platform like Facebook Live or LinkedIn Live or Instagram, or we're all becoming these journalists. I mean, I look at the young lady, 17 years old, that recorded the George Floyd video. I mean, she literally, very, very literally, could be changing the world because of a 9-minute video, because she had a cell phone in her hand. So I think you will agree with me. That's an expression of journalism. And we need to be educating the next group of people that are going to be molding our democracy. Am I just way off track and sounding really corny right now?
No. I know there were several great threads in there. Yeah. I mean, I think that, you know, in order for democracy to function, there needs to be a shared informational foundation that we're operating from. Otherwise, this whole self-governance thing just doesn't work. It kind of falls apart. So yeah, there needs to be, you know, people to go out and collect information and bring it to other people. And I think that the ways that's happening is, as you alluded to, are very much changing. And, you know, I think to your point about, you know, you graduate from college, get a job that you work for 30 years, and then, you know, retire and start your garden. I think that, those are conversations that I have a lot with colleagues, you know, other faculty, that's their lived experience. You know, they worked at one, maybe two different news outlets for their career, and then they retired and now they're teaching. And so that's their frame of reference. But really the world that students are going out into today is vastly different. It's much more entrepreneurial. you know, people are starting their own newsletters, their own publications, their own videos, their own blogs. So you really don't necessarily need the backing of a major media outlet anymore to get your information out there. There's tons of solo practitioners and small collectives of people that are doing some amazing investigative journalism, really speaking truth to power and covering issues like climate change. Looking at some big companies like Amazon and Facebook and how social media intersects with democracy. So and they're doing it. They're completely self-sufficient. They are able to monetize and build lists of subscribers, and then that gives them the kind of revenue that they need to continue producing this content independently. So there's no institutional baggage that comes with it. They can truly be independent that way. And so that's the kind of mindset that I want students to try to get into, whether it is going that entrepreneurial route or even just being open to taking a bunch of different gigs through the gig economy or through going out and, you know, pitching various publications. So that's kind of the bigger mindset that I see for journalism and communication students more broadly.
I agree. So the one thing I will say before we get into the depth of it is that on the gig economy, it promotes a level of independence because my livelihood is no longer tied to that corporate structure. If I work for ABC or if I work for CBS or one of these giant outlets that have these long-reaching tentacles all throughout the world, their revenue base comes from advertising, and all of a sudden there seems to be, and again, I'm not trying to get up on a soapbox to be political. I'm just saying is that sometimes the reporting can be skewed by the revenue and the money that's generated, because we're talking about billions of dollars that funnel through that, and you obviously, you know, if you're tied to that, there is an influence, whether it's perceived, whether it's conscious or unconscious, whether it's, you know, intentional or not, there is a bias that starts. But if I'm in the gig economy and I'm no longer tied to that corporate structure, and again, this is not a, you know, I'm not condemning corporate America. So, I mean, I don't want to create a firestorm here, but I'm saying is that if I'm bringing independence to that, I have that truth to power. I'm able to say things that I don't have an editor standing over my neck saying, oh, by the way, you can't say that, you know, we'll lose our, you know, Procter & Gamble is one of our biggest supporters, you know, or whatever. So there is some power to that. There's that inherent power to that independence. I mean, that's the days of, you know, of our forefathers standing on a box in the middle of town square reading from a broadcloth. I mean, that's almost that revolutionary kind of feel. I mean, that's what I'm, at least that's the sense I'm getting as a mature adult now in this experiment we call a democracy.
Yeah, no, and I mean it's not the gig economy. Well, it is all of those things that you've said. It is not all sunshine and roses. I mean, there are certainly some trade-offs that come with it, and I do cover those in my course. You know, you lose things like the even something basic like health insurance or 401k or a lot of those kind of perks that have come with traditional types of employment. I think that our system of all those kind of things, whether it's business or government or what have you, hasn't maybe necessarily quite caught up with where the labor market's going or where, you know, supply and demand is going. And I'm not an expert on that stuff, so I don't want to get too far out in front of that. But I think that, you know, students and really anyone getting into the gig economy needs to understand that, yes, you can absolutely be your own boss. There's a lot of independence that comes with that. But that also means that if something goes wrong, there's no corporation there to back them. Some of the gig economy platforms have, you know, varying levels of protections in place, but it's not the same as whether it's, you know, collective bargaining through a union, for example, or even just having, you know, human resources benefits, all those kinds of things. So
right. Exactly. I think well, there it's just, are some risks. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, there are some inherent risks. And I wasn't trying to paint a mm-hmm. too rosy of a picture, but mm-hmm. I'm just saying is that there is some of that the country is feeling right now. So let's dive into a little bit at the McCourtney Institute and what's going on there. So as a research study and as what you're doing, you know, for the McCourtney Institute, I know you're in charge of, for lack of a better term, their PR. You're kind of their communications director, right? You're making sure that when something is that comes out of it, that you're making sure that information is disseminated to the right people. But what are some of the things, some of the initiatives that the McCourtney Institute are working on that we, you know, what are the last few notable things that have come out of the Institute that we should be aware of? That I'm saying most of my listeners right now have probably never heard of the McCourtney Institute.
I can almost guarantee it.
Yeah. So what are some of the initiatives, some of the things you're working on that would be intriguing enough for one of our listeners to go look them up?
Yeah, so you know our podcast, which we've talked about, is certainly a big effort of all of ours. That comes out every week. You can find it at democracyworkspodcast.com. We have over 100 episodes, so lots there to chew on. We also do a public opinion poll called the Mood of the Nation poll, which is pretty interesting and pretty unique among polling. You know, I think we all know about polls that are, you know, 52% of people said this, 35% felt this way. But our poll, it's open-ended, so people can actually express in their own words what they think. And so it kind of gives you another layer deeper beyond some of those top-level trends that other polls tend to provide. And we have Penn State students who work with us on it. They actually read through all of these responses that we get from people throughout the country, Democrats, Republicans, young people, old people of all ethnic backgrounds. So it's often an eye-opening experience for them to see just how people who are different from themselves think about the world and how they view politics and the media and you know what's going on in the news. So it really is a great cross-section of how the country feels about various things that are going on. We just wrapped one up all about COVID-19. I'll be looking forward to putting out some information about that. But we really have, we've been doing the polls since 2016. So we have several years now of this really rich data that I know all of my colleagues who have, you know, PhDs and study this stuff are really starting to dig into it now and find out what are some of these trends. How can we connect, you know, things that happen today with larger trends that we've observed over the past couple of years. So lots of cool stuff happening there. We also have a fellowship program for undergraduate students at Penn State where we provide them with funding to do internships at organizations that promote democracy. So there is this whole big world of democracy reform organizations out there that I had no idea about before I started this job, certainly. Some of them cover gerrymandering. Some of them cover, you know, how to make government more transparent and accessible. Some of them focus on creating better relationships between government officials and their constituents. Some of them focus on finance reform, you know, campaign finance, getting money out of politics, all these sorts of things. So there's a whole network of I'd say probably hundreds of different organizations out there that oftentimes don't have the funding to be able to hire an intern for the summer. So we're able to utilize our resources to help facilitate those connections and help students hopefully get their foot in the door to go work for some of these groups after they graduate.
Yeah, that is fantastic. Okay, so we definitely want to make sure that we'll put the link up for on our site. We'll make sure that the link is up for the podcast so that everybody can find it. I'm assuming you also have it available in all the other great places like we do where you want to find your podcast, if it's iTunes or Spotify, or is it just available on your website?
Nope. You can find it. Just search Democracy Works in any podcast app.
Right. Excellent. Same as Mind Your Own Business. All you have to do is just go to the bottom of that page. And I encourage you to subscribe to both. And that way we know that you're interested in letting us know every time a new episode hits. So that's fantastic. That's awesome. So then you take that the next after you're put in your full day job, you know, working at the Institute, then So then you go home and decide, okay, now there are subject matters that you want to write about. As a freelance journalist, are you still kind of in that democracy vein because you're taking that information that you're kind of living in day to day? Or what's your genre? Where are you, you know, pulled or drawn to as a freelancer? What makes you, you know, tick and think about when you're sitting down at the back of your, you know, I was going to say typewriter because I'm so old. But when you sit down behind your keyboard and you decide you're going to write something or you're going to put some thoughts down, what does that look like for you? What is your, you know, subject or genre that you think about?
Yeah, I mean, so when I worked as a journalist full time, I was what was known as a general assignment reporter. So I just covered whatever the hot story of the day was. So I didn't really have a particular beat or interest, but I do love going out and meeting people and telling their stories and finding different ways to do that. I really think that if we all get out and just talk to one another, we find that we're really not as different as we might think that we are. So I tend to focus on different ways that I can do that, different communities to highlight. I write a lot about things happening here locally for several local publications. Just before COVID-19 hit, I traveled around to a couple of churches, Catholic churches throughout Pennsylvania that make pierogies during Lent. It's a very, very Pennsylvania thing. But I had a great couple of mornings with them, writing about the kind of tradition of it and how it's kind of been passed down from through generations, but now the younger generation isn't really as into it anymore. And so there's kind of this, you know, wonder or angst about what's going to happen moving forward. This was even all before COVID-19 was a thing. I was there in late February. I love telling stories like that about traditions, about communities. I was able to do that particular story for the Statesider, which is a great travel newsletter to the point of entrepreneurial journalism that we were talking about before. Two former journalists loved travel writing and loved telling these kind of quirky, offbeat stories from throughout the country. And so they started a newsletter and blog all about it. And now it's, you know, quickly becoming their full-time gig. So I think that there's just so many of those opportunities out there, certainly far more than I can ever come up with stories about. But what I'm working on right now is something here locally. There is, so we have, you know, the kind of county fair tradition, right? So there's lots of these festivals that happen in the summer. Well, they've all been canceled this summer because of COVID-19. So there was this guy who lives in my area that started this Facebook group. It's called Center COVID Concession. So I live in Center County, Pennsylvania. But it's basically this marketplace for all of these concession vendors to post, hey, we're going to be set up in such and such a parking lot for, you know, this weekend. And so people can go and still get their fix of French fries and chicken on a stick and, you know, funnel cakes and all these kind of all this food that you would get at summer festivals. People still want that comfort food, or they want, you know, that experience, but they're not going to be able to get it at the festival. So it's just really innovative and, you know, really cool that they're all coming together using Facebook this way.
That's really cool. And so I have to ask, I mean, just because I just have to ask, because it's the world wants to know what makes a great pierogi.
Oh, well, what I learned from my story and from these ladies that have literally been doing this for 60 or 70 years. So several things. One, you have to have good potatoes. You have to have a good potato to cheese ratio in the filling. You have to have the right kind of dough. It can't be too thick so that it doesn't cook properly, but it can't be too thin because then it won't hold the filling.
You don't want it crunchy. So, you don't want a crunchy pierogi.
I do like a good deep fried pierogi, I have to say. Get some Mrs. T's out of the box and put them in the deep fryer. But no, most people eat them boiled with lots of butter and onions and sour cream and all that kind of stuff.
That's so funny. But that is definitely a Pennsylvania thing. That's that Pennsylvania, German, Dutch, whatever that culture is that comes from the old country. Because, I mean, I'm from back there, so that's the reason I know that. But, if you said pierogi in North Northern California, where I'm calling you from today, I mean, they would go, what the heck's a pierogi? I mean, unless they're from, you know, unless their culture comes from back there. But, you know, that's just not, you know, today they're going to be talking about, you know, I need a, you know, some kind of salad with quinoa.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Yeah. A kale smoothie bowl or something. Yeah,
exactly. There you go. Well, that's so cool. Well, I think that's fantastic. So then tell us about, the one thing I have to mention, because I just would be amiss if I didn't. I know that you are teaching and working in the journalism, school there at Penn State, and probably one of the most famous Penn State grads. I mean, there are a lot of them. I mean, there are lots and lots of them, but one of them in the entertainment business and in the communications business and all of that. I mean, if you're of a certain generation, again, if you grew up in the 70s and 80s and you understood the original Magnum PI, the original JAG, the original, Quantum Leap with Scott Bakula. I mean, some of these most fantastic, radical, crazy, wonderful television shows from the 70s and the 80s were produced and created and written by a guy by the name of Donald Belisario. And Donald actually is a Penn State grad, and he started one of the colleges there, right? I mean, didn't he donate a ton of money to set up one of the communication colleges there?
Yeah, he did. It was around prior to that, but he made absolutely a transformative gift. Oh God, probably 4 or 5 years ago now, to rename it the Belisario College of Communications. And they're in the process of building out a big student media center, and we've been able to hire all kinds of faculty. So yeah, I mean, I'll admit, I didn't know who he was, before this gift came about, but he does great work, and of course, super, super thankful that he's decided to share some of his good fortune with all of us at Penn State.
Well, he is, I have not had the pleasure of meeting him, but I have had the joy of watching and growing up on some of the coolest television shows when TV was like this, was the babysitter for our generation. That was an amazing, when you had three channels, you had, 3, 8, and 13 were the only three channels on the television, and you had to actually get up and walk across the room to change the channel. Mm-hmm. But yes, Don Belisario, it was a fantastic producer. And I know he was a Penn State grad, because I've kind of been in that space for a long time and working in communication and broadcasting. But it's so funny, when he made that gift and made a big splash all over the news. I'm glad he's still alive. I think he is anyway. I should check that. But I know he's got to be in his 80s by now, because he was very, very active as a young man in the 70s and the 80s. So, and that's where you're teaching. So you're teaching in that really cool environment where you're helping to mold the minds of this next generation, this young group of people coming in. And are you, when you're teaching journalism, are you literally teaching pen to paper, or are you broadening the conversation like we talked about, to where you're covering all of these different forms of what we, broadly call journalism now?
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm definitely making a push that, there should not, the word newspaper should not be referenced anywhere in what we're teaching, because it's not the world that students live in. And so I really think about the kind of soup to nuts way that we get news now. So, one assignment that I've done with my students is trying to simulate a breaking news situation. And the first thing they have to write is a push alert that goes out on someone's phone. And then they have to write a Twitter thread. And then they have to take that and turn it into, five paragraphs to go up online. And then at the very end, the last thing that they do is a more full story that might, would also be posted online and then go in the paper the next day. So that's really the frame that I try to get them thinking in, and this progression, and that all of these things are not even necessarily mutually exclusive. I have them do man on the street interviews and then write it up as a Twitter thread. I have them do a Humans of Penn State type of thing where they're taking pictures and then, you know, writing captions on Instagram. So yeah, I really, really encourage them to think broadly about what journalism is and all the different ways that it can be produced and consumed.
That's so great. And can you just talk a few minutes about what you see as the trend? I mean, the days of, like you said, the word newspaper is kind of out of our lexicon now. I mean, we don't even talk about that word anymore. But we have become this attention span of a gnat kind of society. I mean, you know, it used to be 140 characters on Twitter, and then it was, you know, 280 or whatever it is. And Instagram is a picture, and it's almost, you know, and you kind of continuously scroll now. I mean, there's this thing called a chyron. It's at the bottom of a television screen that, you know, we all know what it is. It's that crawler at the bottom that gives you information about who you're talking to or what you're talking about or things that are happening. But our attention span is so short now that if it's more than three paragraphs long, it's like we don't consume it. So talk a little bit about what you're teaching, you know, when you talk about a five line or, you know, a Twitter post or some of the things, what are you seeing as that, you know, how that's affecting our journalistic consumption? And also, is it all about the, you know, the headline? Does it have to be salacious? Is there, you know, what is it that we're doing now? Because the news cycle being on 24-hour cable is, you know, some horrific thing happens and tomorrow we've forgotten all about it.
Right. Yeah. So let me take that in kind of two pieces. One okay. is, you know, we talk a lot about the concept of informational value and how can you convey as much information as concisely as possible. I say to my students all the time that even if they never work a day as a journalist, that being able to write or deliver information clearly, concisely, without a lot of jargon is a skill that's going to benefit them no matter what industry they go into. And also just being able to talk to people, to go up and have to go up to someone you don't know and have a conversation is another skill that will definitely, you know, be useful no matter where they go. Every cocktail party, every networking event that they go to, they're going to, you know, lean on some of the skills that they learned in journalism classes. And so we think about that. There's certainly focus on what's known in the news business as the inverted pyramid, you know, that you put the most important information at the beginning of your story and then kind of go on down the line from there. That's actually a pretty old concept dating back to, you know, when stories used to be printed, or, and you know, they still are, I suppose, but you would be able to just cut from the bottom, right? If you were taking something off of the AP wire, you would just, if you needed to save 3 column inches of space, you would just cut 3 inches from the bottom and there really would not be that much lost for the reader that way. So I think some of those principles still hold true today, but I also think that people have the capacity to consume long form content. There's been a great kind of resurgence of long form journalism, both in online formats, you know, lots of news outlets online, even some of these newer like newsletter entrepreneurial things. I subscribe to a great newsletter called the Sunday Long Read. If your listeners are like kind of long form magazine style features or investigative reporting, I would recommend Googling Sunday Long Read and subscribing to that. They send out a collection of long form articles every week, and it's usually at least a dozen or so. And also, I think, you know, podcasts are really kind of a testament to the other side of the attention span coin as well. I mean, you and I are going to be talking here for about 50 minutes. You know, certainly people like Joe Rogan will have episodes that go over 2 or 3 hours and if people listen to it, right? So, I mean, if the content is good, I think people will stay. Yeah. So I don't think it's necessarily quite as black and white, perhaps, or, you know, quite as simple as, well, nobody has any attention span anymore. I think it's a little bit more complicated than that.
Well, I also think, though, so maybe the attention span maybe wasn't the right question. Maybe I didn't couch it exactly the right way. I think there's the other thing, too, is that my listeners, and I hear this, my listenership is actually down now because they're not commuting. So my listeners come back to me, they get to the office and I'll get an email at, you know, 9:30, 10 o'clock, or I'll get a tweet on social media, or I'll get a DM or something. They'll say, hey, I just listened to your show on my commute into the office. It was fantastic. This, this, and this. And I'll get that feedback. Whereas now I'm finding that, you know, listenership is off slightly because they're not spending that 2 hours in Bay Area traffic getting to and from work or sitting on, you know, the I-5 in Los Angeles anymore because they're not in that mode anymore. But I also think that maybe the attention span that we talked about is not necessarily a lack of attention span. It's that we're now, for lack of a better term, I'm going to use the word multitasking, even though that's an overused term. But a lot of my listeners say, I plug you into my car and then I'm listening while I'm driving or whatever. So they're may not have full attention, but they're getting the gist of what we're talking about because they're in the car. Or I have other folks that say, you know, I have it on in the background because I'm doing, you know, I'm working from home, or I've got, you know, the other things going on, you know, but it's, I'm able to consume this content because it's audible, and it's not, I don't have to concentrate on the reading of the word on the page, or I don't have to read the website or whatever. So I think there's also, I don't know, give me your opinion on that.
Yeah, no, I think that's all right. I mean, we've also on Democracy Works seen our listenership dip a little bit as a result of all the lifestyle changes you were talking about. And I think that's also borne out throughout the podcast industry, though. It does seem, from what I've read, that things are kind of on the rebound now as businesses are opening up, people are starting to have commutes again, you know, all these sorts of things. But no, to that point of multitasking, I've actually heard from listeners of our show that they sometimes need to listen more than once. As I said at the beginning, we do cover sometimes some pretty heady stuff or pretty complex things, and so they kind of listen through once and then like, oh wait, no, I need to go back and listen to this again, or they, you know, make a note of something they need to go back and hear again if they're explaining it particularly dense, or if we veer more into the academic side of things. So yeah, I think that's right, that, you know, people are often doing more than one thing at once. You know, I listen to podcasts while I run, sometimes while I'm cooking, or, you know, doing dishes. I know they're I don't have pets, but I know they're popular for walking the dog and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, in one sense, I think it's great that people can have that sense of companionship and keeping your mind active. On our show, we've done some outreach with local senior centers throughout Pennsylvania, and that's a great audience group that I think a lot of podcasters don't think about. But it's the generation that grew up on the radio. They want to keep their minds fresh and active. They want to stay engaged with the world. And we've had a lot of success from that type of outreach. But yeah, I think that, you know, it is great that people can give us part of their attention. It's enabled podcasting to grow. But I think we should all, as you were saying, be cognizant of the fact that people are listening while they're doing other things, and maybe think about how to create content accordingly based on the level of attention people can give.
I agree. I agree 100%. So that's fantastic. My guest today has been Jenna Spinelli. She is the host and producer for a podcast in central Pennsylvania called Democracy Works. The Democracy Works podcast comes to you on as a joint effort between the McCourtney Institute for Democracy at Penn State and the local central Pennsylvania NPR radio station called WPSU. And that's in central Pennsylvania's NPR. And the Democracy Works podcast is available wherever you get your podcast, or you can go to the democracyworkspodcast.com and obviously download it, subscribe, stream from their website. And we will put all of those links up on Inspired News Radio, because we're really, you know, we really are a fan, and we're a believer that there can never be too many podcasts, especially ones with great content that talk about the democracy and this experiment that we're in right now, that we call the United States of America. It is a great time to be alive. It's a great time to be thinking about our republic and who we are and what we stand for, and the creation of this experiment, but also kind of the future, where we're going. And Jenna, you have been fantastic. You have just been awesome as a guest to bring us a little glimpse of the insight behind the curtain. And I really, really appreciate that. But she's also a journalist. I mean, she teaches journalism at the Donald Belisario College of Communications at Penn State also. And she's a member of the gig economy and doing her own thing as a independent journalist in all kinds of things that she's doing from right there in central Pennsylvania. Jenna, thank you so much for your time today. You have been absolutely fantastic. You've given us such great nuggets. And I want to just let you close up here and say, tell us, how do our listeners engage with you other than obviously listening to the Democracy Works podcast? How do they engage with you if they want to learn more about what you do and what you're standing for? How do they get a hold of you? Is there a best way to communicate with you from all of our listeners from all over the world?
Yeah, sure. So you can find my personal website at jennaspinelli.com. So JennaSpinelli.com. It's also my handle on Twitter. Would love to connect with folks that way. They can also email me at jenna@psu.edu.
Excellent. Okay. Well, thank you so much for being here today. You have given us a lot of information, a lot of things that we need to be chewing on, as you say. And I think that's great, because I think at this time during, you know, civil discourse and you know, the protests that are going on and the change that's happening to the core fabric of our democracy, it is a fantastic time to be, you know, more civically engaged. For those of you that have been asleep or in, you know, hibernation right now, it's time to wake up. It's time to, you know, open your eyes, remove the scales, and say, this is the time. And it's, again, it's not a red blue thing. It's not being a pundit for one side or the other. This is just saying you're a member of this democracy. It's time to know that we, the people, it is us. It's our country. It's who we are. And if you want to shape and be a part of the conversation, now is the time. And you know, there are all kinds of things going on. You've got the pandemic, you've got the protests, you've got civil rights and liberties that are, you know, being trampled on. It's time now to step up and have your voice heard, whether it's, you know, teeny, teeny little voice or it's a lion roaring from the cliff. You know, this is the time to be a part of it. And you're going to be able to look back on it as you're old and gray and say, I was there. You know, it's like being able to say, I marched in Selma in the 60s, you know, and in the 50s during the civil rights. You are able to say, I was there in 2020 when all of this was going on. So, you know, I encourage everybody, listen to the Democracy Works podcast, get in touch with Jenna and get engaged. I mean, I can't think of any other better way to sign off. What do you say, Jenna?
No, that was great. I was sitting here thinking, amen, Scott, as you were saying all that. And thank you to you and to Susan and to your whole team for all the good work you're doing through this network and, you know, bringing shows together and helping people feel more engaged and more connected in your own ways.
Well, we appreciate it. I say it every week. I mean it from the bottom of my heart. I could not do what I do without you, the listener. Thank you so much for coming and tuning in every week to Mind Your Own Business. Thanks for being a part of the tribe that we have at Inspired News Radio. We all know that Inspired News Radio is a place with positive programs that we deliver to the world that are designed to inspire, inform, educate, and motivate. And Jenna Spinelli did that in spades today. She did that. She brought us, you know, inspiration, information, and just was able to motivate us to movement. And we really appreciate that today. As I say every week when I sign off, you know, mind your own business, because nobody else is going to.
You've been listening to Mind Your Own Business right here on inspirednewsradio.com. Thanks for tuning in each week as we interview some of the greatest CEOs and entrepreneurs in the world. You can reach us on Twitter at INR Talk Radio. Always use the hashtag MYOB for Mind Your Own Business. Make sure you stop by and check out all of the past episodes and all the great things that are available on our website, www.inspirednewsradio.com. There's great resources there that you can find for all of our other shows too. Thanks for being a part of the Inspired News Radio family. Until next week, remember to mind your own business.